Thanks for the invitation. And today I'm going to talk about a paper that I was working with Xidong and Dan Freeman. And this talk is based on a paper that we put on archive last year. Okay, so first of all, I'm going to give you a kind of a slide to show the goal of this project, why we are really working on this project. And just in case that you get lost in the middle, and this is the take-home message. So first of all, the goal or the motivation for this project is to deal with the so-called hierarchy or little hierarchy problem in MSSM. Okay, so what's happening in this kind of model construction is we find a very interesting and special Susy breaking mechanism, and if one day we can apply this kind of special Susy breaking mechanism into MSSM, then in principle we hope we can split the mass of top and stop. And at the meanwhile, we hope this Susy breaking mechanism can also break the Susy relation between coupling constants. However, the most important thing that happens in this model is we hope that the Higgs mass does not receive any Susy breaking corrections, even we break supersymmetry, even there is no symmetry reason that Susy the Higgs should remain light. Okay. However, in this for this very special Susy breaking mechanism, it's only realized in a two-way model, live in the three-dimensional space, ADS space. Okay, so it's only a two-way model, and we are currently intensively working on the generalization to either flat space-time directly, or to the generalization to ADS5. So if we can do the generalization to ADS5, then we hope we can make the direct contact to the Randall-Sandrum model, where there, people can start to work on the phenomenology of this Susy breaking mechanism. Okay. So here is the outline. So first of all, I'm going to give you a very brief review on the little hierarchy problem in supersymmetry, and that serves the motivation of why we start this project. And then I'm going to give you the details about this toy model in ADAT3. Because in this talk, I'm claiming that we are solving the hierarchy or little hierarchy problem in the three-dimensional space-time. So I have to firstly show you that there are indeed direct analogs for the hierarchy or little hierarchy problem in 3D space-time. And then I'm going to give you the basic setup of the model, and then I'm going to show that the after we turn on the Susy breaking term, then the mass will not follow the Susy relation anymore, which is an explicit indication for Susy breaking effect. But the most important or most interesting part of this model is the following, that we can prove that there are still exist the flat, purely exact flat R-neutral moduli field exists in such model even when we turn on the Susy breaking term. And by the way, in this model, we do not have any shift symmetry. So in this model, we don't have supersymmetry, we don't have shift symmetry, but we can prove up to all loop orders after we turn on the Susy breaking term, the moduli will still, some of the moduli will still remain exact flat. And at last, I'm going to show that this Susy breaking effect is also very explicit on the way to shift the coupling constant. Okay, so that will provide us a kind of a very ad hoc way to understand how the cancellation is managed themselves to achieve to give you the exact flat moduli direction. And then I'm going to talk about the safety dual of this story, and the string realization. And now I have to emphasize that the safety side of the story, the safety side of the story has already been worked out by Eva Silverstein and her collaborators more than 10 years ago. And for us, we basically work out the gravity side of the story. And why it's interesting to look at the gravity side of the story is because that may provide us a kind of a clue on how to do the generalization of this mechanism. And that's basically what we are currently working on. Okay, and then I'll conclude. Okay, so here is a phenol side. So I'm giving you a very brief introduction of little hierarchy problem. So as we know, that supersymmetry is proposed as a very well-motivated or the best candidate to solve the hierarchy problem. However, the RC or some other collider, they do not see any hint for the superparticles. So that challenged Susy as a solution for the hierarchy problem. So this is a plot that I stole from from this paper, and one of the authors here, that on the x-axis, that's the stop mass. On the y-axis, that's the gluino mass. So, and also this plot is based on the assumption that the UV cutoff scale is only at 20 eV, which is very, very optimistic. So you see that in the LC, that we do not find the stop and gluino up to around 1 TeV. So that actually require the MSSM to have some kind of fine tuning, so that you can achieve the so that you can make the MSSM story to be complete. So the fine tuning is mainly coming from the one loop correction from the top, stop quark to the soft mass term of HR. And the gluino will further have the two-loop correction to the soft mass term of the HAP. Okay. So that's the current situation, and people have already thought along this line to how to get rid of this this so-called little hierarchy problem for many, many years. So there are basically two ways people propose to get around this problem. First is to hide supersymmetric signal through the kinematics or unconventional decay, which in which case it means a superparticle is really there, but you just the signal is just a very unconventional or very special, so you do not find it. One typical example is this so-called stealth SUSY, or light or degenerate top end stealth, so that the decay signal of the superparticle is very soft and it's very easy to miss it in the collider. Or you can the other way is this so-called R-parity violation, which means the superparticle will decay in an unconventional decay channel. So the conventional search for the supersymmetry is not applied anymore. Okay. So the other class of ways without is this very smart model building. One example is the so-called Schirk-Schwarz SUSY breaking in 5D, published also last year. And also colorless supersymmetry, where Nathaniel was involved in this along this direction intensively, and also the so-called super soft SUSY. So people have already played a lot of game along this line and to get rid of this little hierarchy problem. So it's really worth to think about the possible solutions. And actually, none of them is actually work perfectly. So this little hierarchy problem is really coming from the general belief that the scalar mass is not protected by any symmetry, and it will always get sizable correction from SUSY breaking from the loop corrections. So the most ideal scenario that people can imagine to get around this little hierarchy problem is to find a very ideal scenario, which is the scalar mass do not receive any SUSY breaking effect from loop, even supersymmetry is broken. Is that even possible? It's from the very beginning, it sounds like impossible because no supersymmetry and no shift symmetry. Then how is that even possible that for a scalar mass do not receive any corrections? But in this talk, we are going to present a detailed toy model where this ideal scenario is really realized. Yes?
With this ideal scenario, does it matter then at what scale symmetry is broken?
Very good. So later, I'm going to tell you that the SUSY breaking term that we turn on is actually an exact marginal deformation of the theory. So there isn't a scale associated to which the SUSY is restored. So that's an explicit SUSY breaking, not spontaneous.
But there's a splitting in the spectrum.
There is a splitting in the spectrum, which is controlled by one or RADS, yes. OK. So if this is realized, then everyone should be happy. However, so far, the our SUSY breaking mechanism is only working the toy model, which is in the three-dimensional ADS space. Then why should I still work on, along this line? Should I, am I crazy enough to really expect LC really telling us that we are living in ADS 3, not 4D plus spacetime? The reason is there could be some kind of a generalization to 4D flat spacetime, or maybe some direct generalization to ADS 5, in which case I can make the contact to the supersymmetric RS model. And or this kind of a toy model really gave us a kind of a counter example to the general belief that people usually claim for the hierarchy or little hierarchy problem. And that's why this kind of a model is interesting. And also, it will be even better if the generalization is worked out. Okay. Okay, so since I'm claiming the we are solving the hierarchy or data hierarchy problem in three-dimensional space-time, so I have to firstly show you that there are indeed those problems to solve for. So the scaling dimension for a scalar field is 1/2 in 3D, and the scaling dimension for a fermion is 1. So you can construct the exact you can construct the marginal operator goes like phi to the sixth or phi squared psi squared. So at two-loop order, you can construct the mass correction from phi to the sixth or the other operator, and they are actually quadratically divergent. So if supersymmetry is really there, then this diagram will be precisely cancelled by the fermionic counterpart of the theory. And also, you can construct relevant operator goes like phi to the fourth or phi psi squared. And then the two-loop contribution is log divergent, and that is a kind of analog to the Little hierarchy problem. Okay, so there are indeed hierarchy and the Little hierarchy problem in this in the 3D space time. So it's interesting to solve them. Okay, so here is the toy model setup. So first of all, the theory that we are considering is a supergravity theory, leaving ADI-3 because Dan is involved, so it has to be supergravity. And we assume that there are non-trivial R-symmetric group, and the R-symmetric group is gauged. Okay, so the R-symmetric group we study in our toy model is a U1 times U1. So in principle, you can consider other choices for the R-symmetry group. You can start from even just the one U1 R-symmetry and replace the other U1 R by U1 flavor symmetry. That's also fine for us. But in the toy model, we just stick on U1 times U1 for R. And the R-gauge boson associated to the R-symmetry group is R taken to be A and A tilde. Okay. And because we live in ADI-3, so we can directly write down the transaxon kinetic term instead of Maxwell kinetic term for the R-gauge boson. And here is the transaxon kinetic term, and also you have to add in the boundary term in order to get the correct bulk equation of motion.
How many supercharges are you taking?
This is a four-real supercharge. Okay, so the relative sign between the bulk term and the boundary term will determine the boundary condition for the gauge field A and A tilde. Actually, for gauge field A, we choose boundary condition to make A to be a self-dual gauge field on the boundary, and A tilde is chosen to be anti-self-dual on the boundary. Okay, so that's it for the R-gauge boson sector. And now let me put in the matter content. So the matter content, first of all, we introduce a R-charge neutral supermultiplet. We call it phi m, where m stands for moduli, which means the scalar part of this supermultiplet will be identified as R-neutral moduli field. And of course, it has the fermionic partner, and also dot 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 represent the rest of the supermultiplet, depending on the number of supersymmetry. And also, we put in another supermultiplet, which we assume the R charge is non-neutral. Okay, and this C stands for charged. Okay, so it's just a direct analog for the FAM. But the only difference is one is R neutral, the other is R charged, which will be crucial in the later content. Okay, so that's it for the matter content. And so far, everything is supersymmetric. We can do the supersymmetrization for this theory for sure. But now let me put in the Suzy breaking term. So the Suzy breaking term that we turn on is very special. It's an explicit Suzy breaking term. And this term only live on the boundary of ADS space. Okay, and we write this term as A wedge A tilde. We only write the vector component of this supermultiplet. It doesn't involve the fermionic component. So this is an explicit Suzy breaking term that you can consider. And first of all, it involves only A field, the gauge potential term, on the boundary. So, but however, this is not breaking the gauge symmetry, because gauge transformation is required to be vanished on the boundary of ADS space for standard quantization. And so this term still preserves R-symmetry. However, this term explicitly breaks supersymmetry because I only have the bosonic part of the supermultiplet. And the other thing interesting for this deformation is that we can show this deformation is an exact marginal deformation. So there is no RG flow for this SUSY breaking term. And that means after we turn on this term, the ADS3's spacetime will still remain as ADS3.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
What boundary conditions are you imposing?
For A is self-dual and A tilde to be anti-self-dual, which means the A is holomorphic, it's dual to a holomorphic operator, and A tilde is dual to an anti-holomorphic operator. So this is a double trace deformation.
Sorry, you said you want the pullback of the boundary to be self-dual or anti-self-dual?
Yes, the boundary condition that you impose for the A.
And that eliminates all case transformations on the boundary?
If you do everything in standard quantization, I think that's the case. I mean, we.
I'm just surprised that if you allowed the gauge parameter to be a holomorphic function of the boundary, say that it would. Mm-hmm. That sounds like it should give you a holomorphic field and likes and would preserve the condition that the dual operator is holomorphic.
Yes, the dual operator is indeed holomorphic and it's dual to the holomorphic R current on the safety tool.
So why does boundary condition remove all gauge transformations on the boundary?
Oh, this is, I mean, it's just the. I mean, at least for us, this is just the well-accepted fact that if you do the center quantization for the gauge field, the gauge field in the bulk is dual to an operator on the boundary, and the operator is R charge, R current operator, and that doesn't have any gauge transformation. I mean, that's dual to a global symmetry.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, yes.
Transonic battery fields are always confusing. I mean, maybe you can just remind me what my standard results are for ADS3.
Okay, so that's actually related to one of the papers that you wrote with Ross many years ago.
And the term assignment is even more complicated.
Yes, absolutely.
So
okay, let me try to repeat your result, and you can tell me whether my repeat is correct or not. So for higher dimension, so you have two quantizations for the gauge field. You have standard quantization or alternate quantization, right? So for some of the cases, if you just have the so in your paper you actually use the Maxwell term. So the thing is, let's firstly talk about for example for lower d equals 3, which is ADS4. So you got standard and alternate quantizations. The standard quantization is really requiring the gauge transformation to be vanished on the boundary because that's dual to a gauge environment operator. And for the alternate quantization, the gauge field is actually dual to a gauge field leave on the boundary, right? So in that case, you won't be able to require the gauge transformation.
I
understand. In ADS3. Yes. So in ADS3, that's actually very subtle because the standard quantization and alternate quantization, they are actually coincide to each other. So you can imagine that you put in a very small mass term, and then to firstly regularize your gauge field, and then still choose the standard quantization for both cases. Yeah.
Well, no, I guess, so this is where I'm confused with the terminology.
Yes.
If you had a Maxwell field in the bulk, then I understand what you mean by standard and alternate quantizations.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
One of them would involve fixing the gauge potential entirely on the boundary, which is clearly dual to an operator with no gauge symmetries and so forth. But then the term is just would just be fixed. Now, as you say, what you really have is a Chern Simons term, which is the third equation of motion.
Which is the first order.
So the right boundary condition
is
going to self dual, but I'm just slightly confused. Is it really true that if you impose just self duality of A on the boundary, that allows no gauge transformations in the boundary?
I think that's the case. I mean, the gauge field is dual to the R current. I mean, you can definitely claim the R current operator as totally gauge environment, right?
Let's put it this way. What is the map that reconstructs the R current operator from the gauge field? Meaning that, you know, if you have a scalar field and you fix the part of the scalar field that falls off slowly, there's a part that falls off quickly, that gives you the dual operator.
Yes.
For the Chern-Simons field in 3D, as you say, what you're fixing is the self-dual part of the gauge field.
Yes.
So how do I construct the dual operator? Is it the anti-self-dual part of the gauge field, or is it involve derivatives?
No, it doesn't involve derivatives. It's just the standard dictionary. I mean,
Would you just remind me what that is for this case?
No, I mean, if you like. So first of all, you can just do the variation of the action, and then you can get the boundary term of the of this transcendent term, and then the boundary term will be very similar to the A wedge star A term, and then there you just say that to get bulk equilibrium motion F equals zero, you have to require A equals to star A or A to the equals to minus star A.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm just confused. Yeah. I'm happy to impose A equals star A on the boundary. It's
yes.
Clear,
okay.
Right in the equation. And okay, I guess I'll just trust you. You say that implies that I cannot make that any gauge transformation must vanish on the boundary.
I think that's right. You can also check the current correlator and see whether the word identity is preserved or not after we turn on the Suzy Green.
So in Lorentz signature, A equals star A is not equivalent to requiring.
Sorry, this is Euclidean signature.
Well, you want a Lorentz signature model in the end, so let me ask a Lorentz signature question.
Okay, good.
Is A equals star A equivalent to requiring A to be sort of left moving or right moving?
I think so, yeah.
So I can't make a purely left moving or right moving gauge transformation that would preserve that condition?
Okay, I don't have a good answer for that. I don't know the answer. Yeah, we haven't thought about the Lorentz signature at all. Yeah.
Well, I kind of asked the question of Euclidean signature as well. Mm-hmm. If you, I would have thought, and I'm not writing down all of the equations, doing the calculations, but I would have thought if the requirement is that A is holomorphic in some sense, mm-hmm. that I could choose a holomorphic gauge transformation to preserve that condition.
Okay, so let's maybe we can put it this way. So if you are saying that if you are worried that the Suzy breaking term that we turn on is actually break the gauge symmetry, then we can definitely check the word identity, whether the word identity after we turn it on is still preserved or not, right?
Okay.
And I think so actually you can directly do the calculation for the OPE and check the after you turn on this term and see whether the and still do the current correlator and see whether that still preserves the error, right? So that turns out to be fine. So that's a technical way to answer your question. But I don't have a.
But again, the boundary conditions are that one of the two is self-dual and the other one is anti-self.
Yes, that's right. That's determined by the relative sign between the bulk term and the boundary term. Okay. Okay, so so the most important claim of this toy model is the following, that there are still exactly flat moduli fields left over up to all loop orders correction when the Suzy breaking term is turned on. Okay. So.
Sorry, why is that a good thing? I mean, so it's surprising for sure that after Suzy's mm-hmm. breaking, you still have an exactly flat
yes.
direction. But won't that screw you in four dimensions if you want to have a realistic model?
Okay, good. So later I'm going. Yes. Okay. So later I'm going to show that as long as the field is R charge neutral, I can make this exactly the same claim. The R charge neutral field n point correlation function of those R charge neutral fields, they do not receive any Suzy breaking term. So in principle, I can give the mass term. I can give the mass to the scalar field and make them as long as they are R neutral, then I'm fine with it.
Sorry, so Suzy breaking would leave it flat, but then you can give it a mass. Start
from supersymmetric theory.
Right.
You can just impose a massive R neutral scalar field, and then I turn on the Suzy breaking term,
okay.
And that R neutral massive scalar field do not receive any Suzy breaking correction.
I see. So that's the point.
So that's got so it. You can still use it for the.
Even after you turn on the mass.
Yes, that's right. Okay. Nice. So first of all. You may get a little bit worried that the Suzy breaking term that we turn on the boundary of the A dash space is only leave on the boundary of the A dash space, and you may worry whether this Suzy breaking term do any job for the Suzy breaking effect, whether the bulk field receive any Suzy breaking effect at all. So the way to check the Suzy breaking effect is the most simple way is to just calculate the mass spectrum and see whether they preserve supersymmetry relation anymore or not. So one of the way to do that is just to do the calculation of the two-point correlation function of the scalar field in the bulk. And if we turn on the Suzy breaking term, that is equivalent to say that on the boundary one point W, that which I'm going to integrate later, that it will source A and A tilde field into the bulk. And for a particle charged under A and A tilde, I can directly attach the gauge field onto the onto this boundary-to-boundary propagator and directly do the calculation for the mass correction. And the most important ingredient of this calculation is this gauge field's bulk-to-boundary propagator. And that will, and here is are some very important facts of this bulk-to-boundary propagator. First of all, the equation of motion of the gauge field is F equals to zero. So the bulk-to-boundary propagator under this equation of motion can be written as a total derivative respect to the bulk coordinates. Okay, so that's that will be the most important fact of this gauge field. And later I'm going to use this fact again and again to prove why the moduli field will remain exactly flat. And this fact of total derivative is really just coming from the trivial bulk equation motion. Okay. So let's just firstly do the non-surprising part that I'm going to show that the mass spectrum of the particle in the bulk that will be modified in a non-supersymmetric way. So as everyone knows, the ADS-FT tells you that the way that you can do the calculation of the mass is to do the calculation of two-point correlator corresponding to the scalar field. And the asymptotic power law dependence will give you the, will carry the information of the mass. And so in ADS-3, the asymptotic scaling behavior is related to the mass by the following two relations. And it's important to keep in mind that even in the ADS, in the curved spacetime, even the supersymmetry is a good symmetry. The mass of the boson and the mass of the fermion, they are not precisely equal to each other, but they are related by a fixed relation. And the fixed relation is described by this delta F equals to delta B plus 1/2. And I'm going to show that this relation is broken. So the mass spectrum, they do not preserve SUSY anymore. Okay, so here are the three relevant diagrams to do that leading order to do the calculation of the SUSY breaking effect. So you can have A and A tilde attached on X and X prime, or switch the order of A and A tilde. And because we are doing the calculation of the scalar field, so there is additional Siegel vertex that you have to add into the calculation. And the fact that the bulk-to-boundary propagator can be written as a total derivative respect to the bulk coordinates really help us to simplify the calculation because you can play the trick of integration by parts. So that means the x, the only relevant important contribution from this bulk-to-boundary propagator is when x is moving to the either the boundary point or to the other endpoint of this bulk-to-boundary propagator, this scalar bulk-to-boundary propagator. Okay, so I'm just directly telling you the result that you can separate the contribution of this two-point correlation function into two parts. One part I call it bulk part. The other part is the so-called boundary part. The bulk part means when x coincide with x prime, and the boundary part they are defined to be the case where x and x prime approaching to y and z. Okay, so you can. So after some very explicit calculation, it's easy to show that the bulk part precisely vanished. The bulk part from those three diagrams cancel precisely with each other, and only the boundary terms left. And you can carry out the calculation, and it's actually a log divergent at leading order of the SUSY breaking term. And the log divergent is actually precisely corresponding to the correction of the scaling dimension of the operator, the conformal dimension of the operator. And you can directly extract the mass shift from this log divergent piece, and that goes like 2 pi h qq tilde. Okay, and the same formula applied to both fermion and the boson. And this is a very interesting result. The reason for that is because R symmetry, by definition, it will have different charge for the scalar and the boson in the same supermultiplet. So that means I will shift the conformal dimension for a boson and a fermion operator in a different way. So that explicitly break the SUSY relation for the boson and the fermion. So this is, although it's not surprising, but it's important to show that after we turn on the SUSY breaking effect, the SUSY breaking term on the boundary of ADS space, the field have already received the SUSY breaking effect. Okay. And now let me show you the most surprising part of this story, that the R-neutral moduli field will remain exactly flat up to all loop orders. Okay, so first of all, the R-neutral moduli field, phi m, is R-neutral. So that means it cannot directly couple to the A and A tilde from a canonical coupling term. But you can imagine that the story is very similar to the so-called gauge mediation, where the phi m can couple to the Suzy breaking sector, to the sector which has already experienced Suzy breaking. And then you can imagine that generically, you do expect that the loop correction will propagate Suzy breaking effect to the correction, to the moduli field, R-neutral moduli field. One way to imagine that is you can, for example, impose a supersymmetric interaction where the bosonic part of this interaction is a non-trivial cubic coupling. So phi c, which is charged under the R symmetry, has received Suzy breaking effect. And now I'm coupling the moduli field to the sector which has already experienced Suzy breaking. And I'm going to prove that even I turn on this non-trivial coupling between moduli field and phi c, the phi m will still remain exactly flat. Okay, and the other point of this cubic coupling is the following, that this term will explicitly break the shift symmetry of phi m. So you cannot blame the shift symmetry as the mechanism to protect the flatness of the moduli. Okay, so I'm going to show that phi m is not going to receive any Suzy breaking effect. So there are more diagrams involving this, involving the loop corrections to the phi m. But here I'm only presenting four of them where the position of x prime is fixed. So you can again play the trick of integration by part and move this x around along this scalar bulk-to-bulk propagator. So there will be two contributions of the boundary term on the x1. One is coming from the first diagram when x approaching to x1 from above, and the second diagram will contribute another contribution to the boundary term leave on the when x coincide with x1. And we did the explicit calculation, and those two terms precisely cancel to each other due to the charge conservation. The same thing happens to x2. Okay, and then the only non-trivial term left over from the first three diagrams is actually the contribution when x approaching to x prime, either from left or from right. And when you add up those two terms, they will be precisely cancelled by the contribution from the fourth diagram involving the Siegel diagram. Okay, so that means there will be all the leading Suzy breaking effects. They have already canceled with each other within the Feynman diagrams among themselves.
But it is like diffletness, right? Or it's like potential tone where you're really shape of plane.
Yes.
In principle, it could be F tone, which also break flatness.
What do you mean the F term? So here we
potential is like F term square plus D tone, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. If F
this. Yes, but that's usually the terminology that people use to usually use for the spontaneous Suzy breaking. But this is really explicit Suzy breaking, so I'm not quite sure how to say that in the term of F and D. It's neither F term or D term. Okay.
No, but of course it's not D term. But I mean, this original supersymmetric potential was containing this term, which was say zero, for example, without supersymmetry breaking.
Yes.
If supersymmetry say is it's broken, like, and F tone would show up, right? Then it would be maybe accounting potential, maybe accounting for both.
It depends on the model that you write down. It's not clear to me on why the F term and D term will be turned on. Okay, it's totally depend on the theory that you write.
The question that I missed in the setup,
do you have a super potential? The super potential, you can write whatever super potential you like.
So this works for graphics.
Yeah. So the theory will be interactive. So what?
Well, just the question about flatness is related to the super potential.
Yes. Yeah. You can still solve the F term or D term in the theory. That's fine. Yeah.
I mean, is it important that the interaction that you assumed, related to this question, is it important that the interaction you assumed between the field that feels the boundary season breaking and the moduli field is important? That was sort of a Kähler term.
What is a Kähler term?
You wrote down some of your call a couple, you wrote down the
yes.
lowest component,
mm-hmm.
and you said this is what we're going to use to communicate
yes.
with the moduli.
Okay, good.
And that sort of morally was a Kähler term.
Yes, yes,
that
that's right. So, okay, good. So, okay, let me firstly tell you a very quick way on understanding why the cancellation can happen, and then I can directly tell you the even you turn on the non-trivial interacting term from superpotential, that's also fine. Okay, so the quick way, there is actually a very quick way to understand why the cancellation can even happen among all the diagrams. So that's really coming from the fact that this bulk boundary propagator can be written as a total derivative. So you can always do the integration by part and move the derivative from the bulk boundary propagator to the rest of the diagram. And that is precisely word identity for R-gauge symmetry. Okay. So as long as I do not break R-gauge symmetry, the word identity can apply. And you know that word identity is preserved up to all loop orders. So the cancellation is guaranteed to happen. That's why we can claim that this cancellation will happen up to all loop orders. So now let me put in the non-trivial superpotential term into this into this theory. As long as the superpotential term do not break R symmetry explicitly, then I'm totally fine. Okay. So that's something kind of surprising to us because that means there is no SUSY breaking corrections to the one loop correction when the boson is running the loop, and also you can use the same claim to prove that when the fermion is running in the loop, it also do not receive any SUSY breaking effect. So that means previously, before SUSY is broken, those two loops precisely cancel with each other, and now they are still precisely canceled with each other.
One more question, just since you mentioned about the superpotential and the R symmetry. So that's the thing that you were that ultimately is going to save you when you turn the mass on to begin with. At the beginning, I asked you about
yes.
the flat direction.
Yes.
You said you can turn on the mass, and ultimately
yes.
it's correlated with the fact that this effect goes through as long as your superpotential has the R symmetry.
Yes, that's right. Okay. So let's imagine that someday that we really achieve to do the generalization of this SUSY breaking mechanism to a more realistic model, then I really want to identify this R-neutral moduli field to be my Higgs boson, and all the superparticles, I want to identify them as the R-charged fields. And also, the other thing for this diagram is actually it only cares about the fact that the external legs, as long as the external legs, they are R-charged neutral, the cancellation will precisely happen. Okay, so you can imagine that you do endpoint correlation function of phi m, so which is a check of the modification for the moduli potential, and using the argument of word identity, you can directly make the claim that the self potential for the moduli field they will still remain exactly flat. Okay, and also you can attach the fermionic, R neutral fermionic line onto this loop diagram, and no matter whether it's fermionic or scalar, it's the SUSY breaking effect is not received. So in principle, in this model, we can also tolerate the existence of R-neutral top quark in this model, okay? So all the semi-model particles, we would like to identify them as R-neutral particle in the theory setup, and all the superparticles, they will be lifted, okay? And the most surprising part of this model setup is that after we turn on the SUSY breaking term, there is no SUSY supersymmetry anymore, and also because of the non-trivial cubic term showing up in the theory, there is no shift symmetry. So those are the two main reasons that people usually use to protect the mass of the Higgs. And now we are showing that there is basically no symmetry reason, but the moduli field is still remain flat. Okay.
So sorry, yes. You said counterexample of the naive expectation of fine tuning. That means that. Naively, you would expect you need fine tuning to achieve these things.
That's right. So
what
naively,
I understand is, are you saying that in this model, this boundary term you added is the only relevant or marginal deformation?
The boundary terms that we add on is the only SUSY breaking exact marginal deformation.
It's the only one. There's nothing else.
That's right. Although you can still play the trick that say I can still modulo this attach this very special Susie breaking mechanism with any other spontaneous Susie breaking mechanism, as long as the other way that you break supersymmetry still preserve R symmetry, then this you can still use the argument for the word identity to prove the conservation.
It's the only exactly marginal term, but are there relevant terms you could add? Does it also break Susie?
We haven't thought along that line, but so if you add in some relevant term on the theory, then you have to worry that how that relevant term will deform the geometry,
yeah,
and that's a little bit, at least that's a little bit more complicated than what's the current setup. Although people may be able to do it.
I mean, I'm always confused by what people consider a fine tuning problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if the problem, if you're trying to avoid fine tuning.
Mm-hmm.
And you've chosen one coupling that you're allowed to be non-zero, and you've set other possible couplings that have the same symmetry to zero. Isn't that a fine tuning?
No, that's not. So, okay, let's go through the logic again.
Okay.
So, first of all, let's start from a supersymmetric theory. So, in that theory, I can tune whatever I like. I can set those operators to be exactly zero,
okay.
the operators that I do not like. Okay. Now, I only add in this term into the theory, and we can check whether the unwanted terms, they are being generated or not. Okay? And we can prove those unwanted terms, they are not going to be.
So how is this different than just saying, I want my Higgs to be light and I will tune parameters in my theory to make it so and then not call it a little hierarchy problem?
But you're saying you could even, I mean, in the dream scenario in 4D, you could even have a, I guess it was Higgs up, but you were worried about the soft Higgs mass for Higgs up. It wouldn't
get
normalized. I mean, that's the
only
point.
Yeah. I mean.
But once supersymmetry is broken by other atoms, in principle, when you iterate these other atoms, you could get breaking, you know, kind of not directly from this atom, but through iteration of supersymmetry breaking atoms in higher orders, right?
Yes. In higher orders, there could be Susie breaking terms being generated. But however, those Susie breaking terms will not break R symmetry because from the at tree level from my setup, I have precise R symmetry, and I do not expect the loop correction will break R symmetry.
Yeah, no, but for example, when you said that it's flat direction, okay, it's flat at this level, okay, and then if you include this supersymmetry breaking terms, iterate them, in principle, they could generate something which even would break this flatness and then break this kind of the statement that it is for this model there is no potential, right?
Yes.
So because I think that the pictures you're generating, I mean, it's a direct inclusion of this tone, right? But it's not iteration of induced supersymmetry breaking.
I mean,
you have to say supersymmetry breaking in a certain way, right? Could this supersymmetry breaking feedback to say pattern?
No, but that's usually what people do in phenomenology, that they use spiral field to as one trigger for the Susie breaking, and then you can calculate all the other corrections respect to the correction. So let's start from a supersymmetric theory and then add in the one single Susie breaking term, and then naturally it will generate all tons of Susie breaking terms for sure. But that's not a problem for us because we can directly check that as long as we make sure the R symmetry is not broken, the whole argument can still
yeah.
fly.
So let me just try to phrase the question very sharply. With the explicit breaking that you've introduced on the boundary, you
mm-hmm.
do not induce at any level any other terms on the boundary that are potentially dangerous from the introduction of that explicit breaking?
I don't think so.
Okay. Right. So that's the crux of the question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because in certain sense you start from the boundary, you induce this supersymmetry breaking there, and then maybe it would induce, not from boundary, but just inside of this supersymmetry breaking forms, right?
Yeah. No, but I mean, the thing is, from at tree level, at the very beginning, I have a well-defined preserved R symmetry. And as we know, that the quantum correction will.
No, but it's iteration, it means that you are certainly beyond tree level, right?
Yes, but if you have a gauge symmetry, you do not expect the loop correction will break this gauge symmetry, right?
Yeah.
As long as it's not as anomaly free.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see a big problem for that. But we can definitely chat about that later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so so if I tell you that when I turn on the Suzy breaking term on the boundary, and I'm changing the mass of the particle running the loop, how is that even possible that my final result doesn't care about the mass of the particle running the loop at all? So that basically means there is another moving part in this loop diagram that is also receiving Suzy breaking correction. And I'm going to show that the other moving part is the coupling constant. Okay. So you can directly calculate the change of the coupling constant by doing the three-point correlation function, and at least that leading order. And then you can so in this paper we directly show that the cubic coupling constant term is really received non-supersymmetric shift after we turn on the Suzy breaking term. So this is a very interesting and very interesting picture because this model is basically telling you that I do not need the full Suzy package to protect, to maintain the flatness of the model I field. So I give you a good supersymmetry, and then I break the I break supersymmetry firstly by changing the mass spectrum, and the meanwhile I'm also changing the coupling constant. And this model is telling you that there is a well-organized way that you can shift organize those two shifting in a very smart way and still achieve the cancellation and still maintain the flatness of the model I field. And this is precisely what people are currently facing in the LC, that they do not see the stop quark yet, and then but it's not obvious or correct to directly claim that the unseen stop is going to contribute to the amount of fine tuning. Okay, and here there are some kind of subtlety for the three-point correlation function calculation, which is that the in NDIS space the three-point correlation function, the form has already been fixed by asymmetry. So the in principle that I can all the higher order terms, higher derivative terms can be turned down, and all those operators can contribute to the three-point correlation function correction. And in principle, you can do a four-point correlation function calculation to disentangle those the relation on those on all those higher derivative terms, those irrelevant terms in the theory. But we just didn't do the calculation because it's good enough for us to show that the coupling constant has already been shifted in a non-supersymmetric way. Okay, so this actually gave us a very concrete prediction in our model, which is the mass mismatch is correlated to the coupling constant mismatch. So that means if one day we really find stop or Guino on the in the LC, then we can compare how those particles couple to star model particle. And the coupling constant should not agree with the prediction of supersymmetry. And the mismatch of the coupling constant should be correlated to the mass mismatch. Okay, so there is actually a concrete prediction in the model. So that actually provides us a very ad hoc way to understand how the cancellation is maintained, where in the loop diagram, when you have A and A tilde attached on the same side of the internal loop, then you can cut effectively the diagram this way. That is effectively changing the mass of the particle running the loop. And on the other hand, so when A and A tilde attach on the different side of the internal loop, if you cut the loop this way, this is effectively modifying the coupling constant. Okay, so that is basically telling you that the mass shifting and the coupling constant shifting, they are precisely canceled with each other. Okay, so that provides us a kind of a very interesting story to tell. Okay, so that's everything for our model, and let me very briefly talk about the CFT dual part of the story. So this part of the story has already been worked out by those authors more than 10 years ago. Okay, and for us, why we really want to do the why we want to think about the gravity side of the interpretation is really that will give us a clue on how to do the generalization, because the 2D CFT is so special, and you know it's really you don't know whether there are any kind of a very special structure in the 2D CFT that is out of expectation and maintain the flatness of the moduli. But after you understand what's going on the gravity side, it's really coming from the fact that the term that we turn on do not break R symmetry, and the bulk to boundary propagator can be written as a total derivative as a consequence of trivial bulk equation motion. So that actually provides us a kind of a hint on how to do the generalization to higher dimension, which is you just need to find a theory where the equation motion for the gauge field or higher form field the equation of motion is trivial, the field strength equals to zero, then that will automatically give you a theory where bulk to boundary propagator can be written as a total derivative. And you can use such kind of a field or operator on the boundary to do the Suzy breaking deformation. And you can still apply the Ward identity to prove that all the neutral, all the fields which are neutral under this non-dynamical gauge field will not receive any Suzy breaking effect. Okay, so on the CFT side, the deformation is the on the CFT side, the Suzy breaking deformation is written as a double trace deformation. It's a holomorphic current, R current, wedge on the anti-holomorphic R current. Okay, so this is a so you can prove because this double trace operator is a product of holomorphic and the holomorphic anti-holomorphic part of the current. You can prove this is an exact marginal deformation. Okay, and also because we only include the bosonic part of the supermultiplet, that's explicitly break the supersymmetry. Okay, so you can again play the carry out the calculation precisely from the CFT side and do, and then you can see whether the story match or not. That will give us a cross check on the whether we are telling you the correct story. So in CFT 2, you see the it's actually quite subtle or it's quite special that you can do the bosonization of the R current, and then you can factorize for any operator. You can factorize the operator in such a way that the charge dependent part can be factorized out, and then the leftover is actually not charge dependent. And then the only relevant part is this e to the IP eta. That is the only relevant part when you do the Suzy breaking OPE calculation. Okay, so at leading order, you can do the calculation of this. We call this capital Y, and we see at leading order the capital Y provide us the OPE calculation of the Suzy breaking leading Suzy breaking effect provide us the conformal dimension of the operator is shifted in precisely the same way as we calculated from the gravity side, which is not surprising. Okay, so that's a good cross check. And also, you may get a little bit worried that what about the field that is only charged under one R gauge boson? If that field still receive any Suzy breaking correction? So for that, for such kind of a singly charged matter field, you can still do the calculation, but at the second loop, second order of the Suzy breaking term, and you find that the Suzy breaking, the singly charged particle will receive Suzy breaking effect at two loop order. Okay, so that is basically telling us the all the field as long as they are charged under any one of the U1R current, then you can lift them up. Okay, and also there is a stream version, stream realization of this model also worked out in this paper, which is an N1 NS5 system, and you wrap everything on the T4 and take the near horizon limit. The theory is really AdS3 times I3 times T4, and this I3 is really giving us R-symmetry, non-trivial R-symmetry group goes like SU2 times SU2. And for us, we basically just explicitly take the U1 component of this SU2 and then product them together. That gave us the minimal construction of this model. And also in this paper, they provide a kind of a detailed calculation and show that even non-perturbative effect will not lift the model I field, which is well within expectation because you do not expect non-perturbative effect break R symmetry. So that's within expectation.
What non-perturbative effects did they look at?
They look at the scattering amplitude between two planes. Okay, so now let me conclude. So in this talk, we present a very interesting special Suzy breaking mechanism. And under this Suzy breaking mechanism, Suzy is explicitly broken. It's not spontaneously broken. And the mass spectrum do not follow Suzy relation anymore. And also the coupling constants, they are shifted in a non-supersymmetric way. And we prove that there are exact flat moduli fields exist even after Suzy is broken. And this flatness is preserved up to all loop orders. Okay, so previously you expect that SUSY breaking term will propagate to multiply field through loop corrections, but we show that it's not happening here. And this is, if we can apply this to the reality, then this is precisely dealing with the current situation that we are facing right now under the search of LHC, that the naive expectation for the amount of fine-tuning calculation precisely fail here. And that's actually a kind of existence proof that a smart model building can avoid any amount of fine-tuning, even if you do not find superparticles. Okay. So, and also in this SUSY breaking mechanism, that there are very concrete predictions in this model. The mismatch of mass spectrum will be correlated to the mismatch of coupling constant. Although there is no guarantee that you will find superparticles, but as long after you find the superparticle, you can check whether this SUSY breaking mechanism is responsible for the breaking supersymmetry. Okay, and of course we are currently doing the generalization to a more realistic model. And it may well be that this mechanism can directly apply to a model that live in the 4D flat space time. Or you can think about that whether it's possible to do the generalization to ADS5, in which case you can make the contact to the supersymmetric RS model. And also there might be just another smart model building method or some other clever way to avoid any amount of fine tuning. And of course, to stay tuned.
So I'm still missing something. The mass mismatch is the boson fermion mass mismatch you're talking about, even in the supersymmetric theory in 3D.
In supersymmetric theory, the mass of boson and fermion, they are not equal to each other, but they are related by a fixed relation.
In the 3D theory, in the supersymmetric ADS3 theory.
In any dimension curved spacetime.
So you're imagining that, I mean, if that mass mismatch is doing something useful for you, you're imagining an ADS5 theory and
yes.
Some sort of Rangel's under.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. So let me ask about the ADS5 case. I mean,
yes.
It seems like, naively, the ADS5 story, the level you've given here as you go through readily, you just replace vector fields by two forms.
So that's actually our first thought on the generalization,
yeah.
And we did check this this possibility where you can make the B wedge DB transcendent term, and where the equation of motion is H equals zero, and we precisely calculate the bulk to boundary propagator in for the B field, and which is also a direct analog for the total derivative. However, the thing is how you couple this B field canonically to a particle. So Kalman-Mandula no-go theorem is saying that you cannot gauge a two-form field to a particle. So that's really the problem. So you can imagine that I can, for example, do some compactation and use the winding mode and couple to the two-form B field. And then, so you know, when you do the compactation, you can reduce the two-form field into a one-form field. And then you can couple this one-form field to any winding mode in this story. That's, of course, there are reasons for us not proceeding along that direction. So that's one way that you can imagine to do the generalization. So the way that we are currently proceeding is to consider the mixed rank transcendent term. So we can introduce a three-form field. So in that case, you can write A wedge DC3. So if you study the bulk equation of motion, you get DC equals to zero and DA equals to zero. And however, that mixed rank transcendent term theory is not worked out, as far as we know. So we have to start from the very beginning and do the calculation for the bulk to boundary propagator. It's not that trivial. That's why it takes months for us to go along this direction. And that's precisely where your story on the alternate quantization may come into our setup, which I would like to talk about that offline.
Yeah, I need to work that out too, because it depends on the equations of motion.
Yes.
And that simply has not been worked out.
Yes.
But let me ask, what's your vision for moving from the just pure ADS5 to the RS model? Because of course in the RS model, you don't have a boundary anymore. So
yes.
The idea that you would introduce an explicit coupling at the brain that would break.
Good. So there are two things that can be different in the RS model. So first of all, there are you have to put in the IR brain because you have to break the conformal symmetry in the dual theory. And as long as the way that you put in the IR brain do not break R symmetry, I'm totally fine with that because you can still use the world identity. So the IR brain is not a problem. The UV brain is really a problem because we kind of require the gauge transformation to be vanished on the boundary.
Yeah.
So if you do not cut off your geometry, then that may cause some problem. That's a very advanced question, and I don't have the concrete answer for that. But there are some tricks in the RS model that you can introduce some kind of the boundary dual freedom when you put in the UV brain that still achieve the kind of effectively achieve the.
There are many things you can do. I mean, you don't have to
work. Yeah, there might be ways.
Is the idea that you just want to introduce an explicit coupling at the brain that would break supersymmetry?
Sorry, which brain?
UV brain.
UV brain.
Maybe with the IR brain. I don't know. Where are you
going
to?
I would like to break the supersymmetry on the UV brain. Yeah.
The UV brain.
Yes. And I mean, imagine to turn on some kind of quantum field Susie breaking terms on the UV brain. But how to make the theory fully self-contained, that's a hard job. But currently, let's focus on the generalization to ADS5, because usually one attack to this mechanism is saying that there are still something special in ADS3 that you guys are not thinking about. But let's just firstly realize that ADS5, indeed, this mechanism can be worked out, then we can proceed on the phenomenology.
Yeah, I'm just curious in this idea.
No, actually, yeah. So actually, even that we cannot, work out a theory that with a finite UV brain, we can still study the CFA dual part of the story on the 4D flat space time, whereas you imagine that there is a strongly coupled sector and how to achieve the maintenance of the flatness of the moduli operator in that story. So this proof doesn't depend on whether you have gravity or not in this story.
Oh, I see. You think it could be useful as a description of this for only a couple of
things. That's right. That's right. That's another way to go, yes. That's why I'm saying that you can imagine that directly apply this mechanism to the 4D flat space time. Yes.
All right. Any more questions? All right.